Preface to the edition of 1892. In the preface to the fourth edition of this book, printed in 1872, I spoke of the changes that had already come over the far west. Since that time, change has grown to metamorpho, not sciences. For Indian DPs, with their trophies of bow, lance, shield, and dangling scalp locks, we have towns and cities, resorts of health and pleasure seekers, with an agreeable society, Paris fashions, the magazines, the latest poem, and the last new novel. The sons of civilization, drawn by the fascinations of a fresher and bolder life, thronged to the western wilds in multitudes which blighted the charm that had lured them. The buffalo is gone, and of all his millions nothing is left but bones. Tame cattle and fences of barbed wire have supplanted his vast herds and boundless grazing grounds. Those discordant serenaders, the wolves that howled at evening about the traveler's campfire, have succumbed to arsenic and hushed their savage music. The wild Indian is turned into an ugly caricature of his conqueror, and that which made him romantic, terrible, and hateful, is enlarged means not sinewy scourged out of him. The slow cavalcade of horsemen armed to the teeth has disappeared before parlor cars and the effeminate comforts of modern travel. The rattlesnakes have grown bashful and retiring. The mountain lion shrinks from the face of man, and even grim old Ephraim, the grizzly bear, seeks the seclusion of his dens and caverns. It is said that he is no longer his former self, having found, by an intelligence not hitherto set to his credit, that his ferocious strength is no match for the repeating rifle with which discovery he is reported to have grown diffident, and abated the truculence of his more prosperous days. One may be permitted to doubt if the bloodthirsty old savage has really experienced a change of heart, and before inviting him to single combat, the ambitious tenderfoot, though the proud possessor of a Winchester with 16 cartridges in the magazine, would do well to consider not only the quality of his weapon, but also that of his own nerves. He who feared neither bear, Indian, nor devil, the all-daring and all-enduring trapper, belongs to the past, or lives only in a few gray-bearded survivals. In his stead we have the cowboy, and even his star begins to wane. The Wild West is tamed, and its savage charms have withered. If this book can help to keep their memory alive, it will have done its part. It has found a powerful helper in the pencil of Mr. Remington, whose pictures are as full of truth as of spirit, for they are the work of one bullet who knew the prairies and the mountains before irresistible commonplace had subdued them. Preface to the fourth edition. The following sketches first appeared in 1847. A summer's adventures of two youths just out of college might well enough be allowed to fall into oblivion, were it not that a certain interest will always attach to the record of that which has passed away never to return. This book is the reflection of forms and conditions of life which have ceased, in great measure, to exist. It mirrors the image of an irrevocable past. I remember that, as we rode by the foot of Pike's Peak, when for a fortnight we met no face of man, my companion remarked, in a tone anything but complacent, that a time would come, when those plains would be a grazing country, the buffalo give place to tame cattle, farmhouses be scattered along the watercourses, and wolves, bears, and Indians be numbered among the things that were. We condoled with each other on so melancholy a prospect, but we little thought what the future had in store. We knew that there was more or less gold in the seams of those untrodden mountains, but we did not foresee that it would build cities in the waste and plant hotels and gambling houses among the haunts of the grizzly bear. We knew that a few fanatical outcasts were groping their way across the plains to seek an asylum from Gentile persecution, but we did not imagine that the polygamous hordes of Mormon would rear a swarming Jerusalem high in the bosom of solitude itself. We knew that, more and more, year after year, the trains of emigrant wagons would creep in slow procession towards barbarous Orion or wild and distant California, but we did not dream how commerce and gold would breed nations along the Pacific. The disenchanting screech of the locomotive break the spell of weird mysterious mountains, women's rights invade the fastnesses of the Arapahoes, and despairing savagery, assailed in front and rear, veil its scalp locks and feathers before triumph not signed commonplace. We were no prophets to foresee all this, and, had we foreseen it, per not synapse some perverse regrets might have tempered the ardor of our rejoicing. The wild cavalcade that defiled with me down the gorges of the Black Hills, with its paint and war plumes, fluttering trophies and savage embroidery, bows, arrows, lances, and shields, will never be seen again. Those who formed it have found bloody graves, or a ghastlier burial in the maws of wolves. The Indian of today, armed with a revolver and crowned with an old hat, cased, possibly, in trousers or muffled in a tawdry shirt, is an Indian still, but an Indian shorn of the picturesqueness which was his most conspicuous merit. The mountain trapper is no more, and the grim romance of his wild, hard life is a memory of the past. As regards the motives which sent us to the mountains, our liking for them would have sufficed, but, in my case, another incentive was added. I went in great measure as a student, to prepare for a literary undertaking of which the plan was already formed, but which, from the force of inexorable circumstances, is still but half accomplished. It was this that prompted some proceedings on my part, which, without a fixed purpose in view, might be charged with youthful rashness. My business was observe and not sign shine, and I was willing to pay dearly for the opportunity of exercising it. 2 or 3 years ago, I made a visit to our guide, the brave and true-hearted Henry Chatillon, at the town of Carondelet, near St. Louis. It was more than 20 years since we had met. Time hung heavy on his hands, as usual with old mountain men married and established. His hair was touched with gray, and his face and figure showed tokens of early hardship, but the manly simplicity of his character was unchanged. He told me that the Indians with whom I had been domesticated, a band of the hated Sioux, had nearly all been killed in fights with the white men. The faithful Disloriers is, I believe, still living on the frontier of Missouri. The hunter Raymond perished in the snow during Fremont's disastrous passage of the mountains in the winter of 1848. Boston, March 30, 1872. Chapter Packeye. The Frontier 3-2. Breaking the ice 14 Fort Leavenworth 28 jumping off 33 V. The Bayou Blue 47 6th. The Platte and the Desert. 64 7th. The Buffalo 81 8th. Taking French leave 109th. Scenes at Fort Lee Amy 120X. The War Parties 139XL. Scenes at the Camp 169-12. Ill Luck 193 Hunting Indians. Point. Point. 203 The Ojalalash Village 233 15th. The Hunting Camp 261 16th. The Trappers 292 17th. The Black Hills 305 18th. A Mountain Hunt 310 19th. Passage of the Mountains 326 20th. The Lonely Journey 346 21st. The Pueblo and Bent's Fort 371 22nd. Deep Rouge, the Volunteer 381, Indian Alarms 388, the Chase 425th, the Buffalo Camp 414-26th, down the Arkansas 434-27th, the Settlements 455.